quick summary. Two worldviews, traditional Christian world of transcendence, atheistic worldview of reason and community. Think of the Enlightenment. Going off the external authority. Now, I believe what he's doing next is saying, so how do you get from traditional belief in which you are not important, but God calls the shots? The ethics you live by are given to you by a religious canon. You have to go through a step of seeing yourself as a gateway, that you've got talents and interests which are coming to you for their development. But the problem is with that, that's where he picks up. You believe you are the moment of the world, the eternal moment. That's about halfway down that second column. You don't distinguish between yourself and the fact that that talent comes from a transcendental place. And the...
Say that again.
You don't realize, you don't distinguish between your talent and the fact that that comes from a transcendental place. He is the moment of the world, the eternal moment. Rather than recognizing there is a plan beyond time and space which we are fulfilling. We aren't eternal. What moves through us comes from an eternity. That would be Jung's idea of the a priori self. Humanists don't acknowledge that. They don't see that the sacrifice of the ego is required to serve that eternal moment. That's where they fall down. They're a step ahead of letting authority run their life. They're developing their own life. They haven't fully realized how developing your own life means you've got to turn back to transcendence, but on a different level.
So they don't believe we're born with these things, seeds of something inside us.
Right.
They feel they create their own life.
Right. And that very often there's a plan behind those talents, and we don't like that plan.
We wanted to make it to go one way when it actually wants to live in this other way.
Exactly. I believe that's what he's saying.
And would you also say those are the people who get stuck in the third and feel that their transcendence is not only a law for them, but it's a law for
you? You could say that, yeah. That's a good point, Ann. Yeah, you don't realize the relativity of your own standpoint.
Say some more about that.
Well, you know, I'm developing, Tony Robbins. Were you?
This worked for me and it can work for everyone.
And if it doesn't work for you, there's something wrong for you. And if you pay me $10,000, I'll give you a front seat at my lecture and you will be imparted with everything that works.
See, I was thinking of it in terms of I've transcended my religious upbringing. I've come out as gay. Now I'm going to tell you that everybody has to come out. They have to do this. They have to go to these meetings. They have to do this.
You're all gay and you don't realize
it. Well, right. Or as a gay person, this is your fight, whether you feel like it's your fight
yeah.
or not.
Yeah.
Or if you quit smoking, then everyone should quit smoking, and yeah.
I mean, I'm a reformed smoker, and I noticed a tendency in myself. And I can see the healthful side of the smoking ban, but it's like Puritanism all over again. Mm-hmm. It's so obsessive. Yeah.
I'm a Catholic, and I'm a Catholic.
Yeah.
I mean, that... I had an argument with this priest, and he said, when was anybody ever killed at the abortion clinic? I thought, this argument's over if you don't know that. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, I believe that's what he's getting at. And what is left is smoke and ashes.
That's the alchemy purpose.
But it's smoke and ashes with no rebirth.
Okay. So this is the road that doesn't go anywhere.
Does not go anywhere.
Okay. It doesn't re-enliven. Whereas in alchemy, something is...
Right. And I believe... I think this is where I was getting at. He's saying things... with a double meaning. The flame dies away. I carried that over. I saved it from the fire.
Talking about life.
I think flame means desire. And so... what he's saying is, I am going to live through the flame and take something from it. That is the son of the fire flower. So it's the difference between living the fire and burning up versus living the fire and extracting an eternal value from it.
In one, you're burned up, and in the other, the fire becomes an ember that warms you.
Yes, and I think more than warms you, it lasts. Now, eternity, that's one of these words he throws around, and I think there probably is a metaphysical dimension to it, but if that's confusing, I would just say, which lasts. I'm okay, you're okay. Who's heard of it? In the last 30 years. See, that came and went. We're still talking about Jung. Because there is something in his work which endures. So I think if you're uncomfortable with the word eternal, you could simply put that you bring something to the earth that endures. Now, I think parenting is certainly one way to do that. But those who don't have children, or those who have children and want to leave something else, this process tries to help us create something that will last. And that is the distinction between burning in the fire and end of story, becoming ashes, or burning in the fire and bringing the sun of the fire flower out of it.
I'm getting another sense of what letting go of ego is. As I understand, it's basically letting go of that old ego stuff. But you're developing a newer, stronger relationship. Ego relationship. Mm-hmm. Another point. That will create something that will last.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So you're getting rid of the false ego, which would be like a false container, and creating this stronger container to be able to hold.
Mm-hmm.
Right. what's coming so that you can create out of that place.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that what you create will be around for a while.
And like in the toynbee, you hope that what is created then is the seed for something.
And
that maybe it's an eternal path.
What I like about him then is then if it is genuine, it will affect you and it will affect you times. Mm-hmm. And that you could call eternal. Now, there may also be another metaphysical dimension to it. I told you the dream I saw that guy who was ready to commit suicide. He went to his own funeral. And what he realized was the state of mind he achieved in life, that his anima achieved in life, would be his state of mind through all eternity. So we don't know what other things are going on. I'm just trying to simplify it a bit. But I think there's probably, when he says eternal, there's a lot more to it. It really does have to do with life after death. That's so hard to conceptualize. You see, I myself am the eternal fire of light versus just the fire. Here, the light of that fire is mentioned. This is the distinction that he's trying to work out, and it is not so clear. But that's how I would try to put it in rational speech. And what he does is he extracts the seed. The black and golden seed and the blue starlight from the fire.
That's a new image.
Mm-hmm. So did we see something similar to that in some of the images?
I don't remember seeing it quite like that.
Okay.
Do you?
I don't know. It just sparked the memory. So I may need to go back.
Well, there was the seed several times. Mm-hmm. It was dark. It was light.
Did we see a blue star?
Well, we saw a white star. But this blue seed gives off starlight, it sounds.
The black and golden seed and its blue starlight. So those seeds give off a blue starlight.
Yeah, so that's the seed and the star coming together.
Right. Instead of being the star, you are the starlight. The light of the star, is that the star?
Or you radiate. I think it's the question of being the light. He says, I am of the eternal fire of light.
Okay.
And I think, you know, the idea is if you are creating from the self, it's the nature of the self's interest in life that what it suggests will last. Versus the ego looks for recognition. This dimension that he's trying to articulate, remember this is very early, he's trying to articulate, has something eternal, lasting, effective, beyond what it offers me. You gave me that quote of the, do you remember, can you recite that quote of the Greek tree?
It's actually, I got that from Barbara Streisand. Civilization survives, this is just paraphrasing, when old men plant trees whose shade they will never sit in.
Yeah, see the idea? There's something done that doesn't benefit the ego,
right,
but which lasts.
Right.
That is the creation of a mature personality. I came across a concert by Rod Stewart, gave in London 10 years ago. I'd seen him in London, and I've always kind of, I like his music. No, he's a complete egotist. And in his concert, he'd say, well, this song has been sung, but I sang it first. See, it's always I, what I did. Not the song, but me.
Mm-hmm.
and it's charming, but, you know, it won't last.
It might last, but
he won't.
He will be.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he sings because it's a good song anyway. Anyway, yeah. And I think one of the reasons this is so confusing, this is what Jung is trying to get at here, is unconscious speaking. And it's coming up in all these confusing thoughts. But that's what's going on. I saved being from time. See, something that lasts. Redeeming it from the fires of time and the darkness of time, from gods and devils. Now, again, why it's so, well, we have the image of treasure and blue starlight again. But I think why it's so confusing here, you could read this in two ways. Philemon replied, when you have surrendered everything that wants to burn to the holy flame. Now, you could say that to mean, give it up for the flame. Or you could say, live it. So that you're living it is your surrender to the fire. I think that's what Philemon is saying. Now, Philemon himself would represent the attitude that lives after you've gone through the fire. So at times he speaks like pure transcendence. And it's easy to get confused there. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jung was confused by that at this point himself. But the deeper consistent pattern is living and extracting.
And then that footnote there, which you don't like to go into.
No, go ahead.
He's talking about how many lights, seven lights, and then so then he goes through the whole seven, and I was really kind of lost there. So I don't know if that's based on something else that I need to read or
no. Don't read anymore.
The first part makes sense. The first light starts with a pleroma, then the abraxas. The third is the sun. The fourth is the moon. The fifth is the earth. The sixth is a phallus, which threw me. And then the seventh are the stars.
You know, phallus does mean light in Greek.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Or light bringer, one or the other.
Okay.
But I think phallus as a image of creative power.
Okay. Right. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Thank you. I think that's so helpful. Okay. In my work.
And then he goes on to say that to ask why the mother and the sky are missing, mm-hmm. and they're enclosed in the star, they are bridges to the star.
Yeah.
I just thought that whole section there, and that was interesting.
Beautiful. Yeah.
What did you say was missing? The mother and what?
The mother and the sky were missing.
Yeah, again, when I got confused, I just try to go back to what I do in this day. And is the simple image here is the star. And that there are two ways to get there. One, you get there directly, and the other, you get there through the earth. And getting there directly is transcendence, and the problem is it's got a huge shadow. Another way to deal with the star is to say there is no star, and what you get is inflation. And then what Jung is trying to get at is the star is reached through the fire.
So when you deny the star, you become the star.
You are the moment.
Okay.
That's what, that would be humanism.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I would put that too in context of the Enlightenment. If you think what the Enlightenment accomplished, it's enormous. They got rid of kings. We determine our own fate. But then look at our Constitution. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The highest value is the ego. That's the downfall of the very world that through our kingship. Okay, that's 54, I believe. Now comes a swing back. A figure appears on 355 who is preaching the same message of abstinence. See, that is another way to the star. That's the old way to the star. To live for eternity. And Jung rejects it. You bring grief and despair. I think this is so important. I wanted to be among men. You know, think what the church gave birth to, the anchorites. Living alone in the desert and living above in monasteries. And Jung is saying, I don't want that. If that's the way to God, I don't want it. And yet he realizes there is another way to God, another way to God.
Are some called to that?
I think so.
Because when we were in Italy in May, one of our tour guides did a presentation on a group of monks somewhere in Italy, and they lived
in this cave.
They live a very solitary life. They're only allowed to speak on Sundays or something like that for so many hours. But the process to be accepted into their order, you know, they expect you to go out and experience love. Experience what it's like to be a human being before you make that decision. So they do it pretty consciously, mm-hmm. I would think. But I just wonder if some people aren't called to that way of life, and that they're holding it, their little piece of the pattern of life.
I think you have to say that. Yeah. I'd say not many. And remember the dream of the priest I told you.
Mm-hmm. I guess I took the dark one as some darkness that Jung himself would have to integrate, because Philemon goes on to say that you'll be hearing from him, but now
yes.
I'm going to take you to fulfill what he prophesied for you.
Right. Now, where I went with that, Carol, is comes up a little later.
Mm-hmm.
That I thought I marked it, but maybe I didn't. Maybe I didn't mark it. See, the problem with it is a route to transcendent awareness of the spirit, which is what Jung wants to get to. But he wants to get there being among men.
Well, I suppose, isn't the confrontation with the shadow a separation from men, in a way? You separate yourself from blaming others, or seeing
yes.
yourself in others.
But here I think it's a separation that he doesn't want. What the stranger has that he does want is transcendence. What the stranger has that he doesn't want is absence. And he's asking himself, can I get what the stranger has in my own way?
Okay.
That's what I understood. You'll be hearing from him again.
Okay. Well, he says there too, compassion leads to alienation. I just wondered if it's, he's asking him to live in a different, you know, I bring abstinence from human joy and suffering.
Yeah.
There. Compassion leads to alienation, pity, but no compassion, pity for the world, and a will held in check towards the other.
Right.
part of the work of going inside, it is a certain amount of abstinence from the outer world.
For a while. Yeah.
But you can't stay there, because the purpose is to get back out. And
but see, I think this guy represents staying there.
Okay.
He is the old medieval Christian otherworldly view of life.
I guess I got confused when he said compassion leads to alienation. Is he saying to give and give and give and give?
Alienation from yourself, I guess.
Yeah. Is that alienation?
Well,
there's alienation because you're the one who's giving, you're the one who knows better. I'm just trying to play around with that and understand it.
Yeah, it's a very ironic statement. And I think he's actually contradicting himself, that if you seek a life above the world, it leads nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That kind of compassion can't be sustained.
I don't know if this is correct, but when I worked with those two images, I was working with it in the confines of being a nurse. You know, they always teach us, you know, get, for a while the thought was be above the patients, you know, don't get too involved emotionally, then it switched back to be more involved emotionally. But there's a balance where you have compassion, you have connection, but if you become so enmeshed that you can't function,
yeah,
then you can't help them. So there's a balance between, and it's, I guess, pity seems judgmental, but it has a little more distance.
No, I think it is meant judgmentally here. I mean, the guy is actually criticizing himself and he doesn't realize it. But the problem with compassion is, suppose you don't feel compassionate. Then what? And believe it or not, that comes up in psychology all the time. There's this whole school that talks about the importance of empathy. I talked to one of these guys once who was sort of an empathy therapist. I said, what happens if you don't feel like being empathetic? He said, oh, that's kind of transference. I said, so why is it desire to feel empathy, not countertransference? For Jung, if you don't feel like being compassionate, don't be compassionate. But that transcendent view lives in this world of goodness, and you damn well better be good. But where it's leading is actually alienation, because no human being can sustain that amount of caring.
And also, that misplaced compassion also leads to disaster.
Not to mention,
right now we have a prescription drug epidemic, and part of that is because we misplaced compassion.
Mm-hmm.
People having physical pain, and there, it is horrible to have physical pain. But there's a point where just throwing more narcotics at the physical pain is counterproductive to life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing that, you're being compassionate, but that's an evil compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not to mention the destructive effect of compassion. That's one thing I had to learn myself since I've been out of training, is if I don't feel like listening, I don't listen. And usually there's a reason. But boy, you tell that to a Cahusian.
I find it helpful to distinguish between identifying with someone and having empathy with them. If we identify with someone, we lose ourselves. And, you know, that's just disaster for everybody. If we, because it cannot be sustained, and then we'll
flip to the opposite.
Empathy is a choice that's made for a reason in a given time and has a closure.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can sustain that.
See, that differentiation is not included in what he's talking about here. He's talking about somebody who feels they must always be compassionate, which would be if you're following the life of Christ, you are always compassionate.
Well, I don't know. Jesus took time off, too.
Not a whole lot.
Is it reported?
Yeah.
Well, it is reported. I mean, that's how he withdrew to the other side. He left the crowds. I mean, it isn't talked about very much, but it is in the text.
Yeah, that's the point. It isn't talked about very much.
Yeah, but it is in the text.
Yeah.
More than once.
But the other point is, you said it's a choice. But what about when you choose and you want to feel compassion and it just isn't there?
Yeah.
And
well,
you
then it gets different.
Yeah. Sometimes you what you choose and what you get are two different things. That would be the difference between what your ego wants and what the self is giving you despite what you want.
See, but I think you have to look at that too, because that is... That's a gut feeling.
Yeah.
That's your instincts talking.
Right.
And I think you have to listen to that.
Yes.
You don't have to judge. You just have to listen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you,
you have to judge, too.
why am I feeling this?
Yeah. Right.
Why? Yeah.
Well, it might be because you're being manipulated.
That yeah, see, there you go.
Right. It may be because you're being manipulated, but what if you feel like you should shoot somebody for texting in a movie theater? You should judge that. You should do that.
Well, I think what he's driving at here is that this ideal of goodness leads to trouble.
Of goodness only.
Of goodness only. And, getting over your bad feelings, getting over your selfishness, getting over your greed, getting over your lust, and maintaining a positive attitude toward life leads, ironically, to alienation. Mm-hmm. As it doesn't account for the sum total of human emotion and needs. That's why he says you bring grief and despair.
And then he says, you will go to men as a veiled one.
Right.
Who like shines at night.
But, yeah, that's ironic too, I think. Huh?
You're going to be veiled, and your light is going to be more...
And that's the stranger speaking.
Mm-hmm. Or I thought it was Philemon.
No, that's the stranger, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So can we trust what he has?
No, I mean, I think that's the point.
Yes.
See, it's all about you being the star. Mm-hmm. Your stellar nature begins. What about your human nature?
This is like early on when Salome says, you're Christ.
Absolutely. You see, he wants Christ, but he also wants his humanity. And he sees the prevailing image of Christ in conflict with his humanity, and he's not willing to sacrifice his humanity. You know, I know certain Jungian gave a workshop on this and talked about the Red Book as being about love. I wish you could have been there and I would have said, do you realize it's love below the waist, adulterous love for two women? What do you do with that? That's the problem. That's what he's dealing with. And so he has to give up his stellar nature in order to reach his goal, which is to come to his star. That's why I thought Philemon says, I can fulfill what the Dark One prophesies for you. It's on what level do we understand the star, starlight.
Well, I mean, Jung did have to go out among men now as one veiled. He could, as far as getting across his worldview, he speaks of that,
but,
really.
Well, I don't, this is confusing to me. Where I went with it was actually the guy is saying, don't be yourself.
The Dark One is basically saying, identify with your with the image. Identify with your star. Because
yeah. And don't expose yourself. Well, there's a truth to that, and there's a falsehood to that. That your selfhood is a distraction from your stellar nature. That's what you veil it. And what do we tell young people starting in industry? Be careful what you show. Be careful what you say. Learn what the company wants. Give it to them.
So that would go back to community and everything versus community and community. Being out of community is sickness and...
Yeah, yeah.
But too much community and everything is dissolution.
Or, you know, what he's wrestling with is how can I be myself in community and survive? And not be of the community, but in the community. Where do I get the orientation for me to complete my work as a citizen of Küsnacht, Switzerland? These are the questions going through this young guy. And at times you do have to be careful what you show. But to say never show yourself, that's a disease too.
So you're always walking that tightrope.
Yeah, you're always walking that tightrope. That's why he can't let the essential message of the stranger go, although by golly, he's not going to live it the way the stranger says, which is to be apart from the world, not literally, but to have a point of view not shaped by the world. I'm going to give my message whether the world likes it or not. That's what he's working out here, as far as I get it. But why it's so confusing is all of the conflicting levels of consciousness are thrown at us, and some of them are true on one level, but not true on another level. We always got to figure out on what level to take these things. Okay, so far? Now we get a woman. As he spoke these words, he touched my eyes and opened my gaze and showed me the immeasurable beauty. And I looked for a long time until I could grasp it. But what did I see? I saw the night. I saw the dark earth, and above the sky stood gleaming in the brilliance of countless stars. And I saw that the sky had the form of a woman, and sevenfold was her mantle of stars, and it completely covered her. Kaboom! A new image. Now, I dug and dug and dug. I could find no references anywhere to a woman with a mantle of stars.
Revelations?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a mantle of stars, is it?
I don't know. It's what's the word they use?
Feet on the
star.
Sun and stars.
Cloak, they say? Does it say cloak?
I thought she had her feet on the moon and her head was in the, illuminated by the sun. Do we have any Bibles here? No. It is a church after all.
They used to have one hidden in there.
Maybe back here.
Oh, hidden. Just Google it.
Okay. I shall.
I didn't think she had a coat of,
Did you ever open the forbidden closet?
They have some crackers.
What do I?
Revelation Sun Woman, maybe? The woman cloaked, is she cloaked in the sun? Is that what it is?
Unfolded in her mantle.
I don't think she has a cloak of stars on.
Mantle of stars, move that.
I'll check that anyway.
Woman of the Apocalypse?
Try Woman of the Apocalypse, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the whole image reminds me of my painting, Midnight Jeweler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought of
you.
She's wearing a white dress and a blue mantle. Biblical text. It's very long.
I'll read Revelations for next time.
Yeah. Well, if you have an archetype, the Apocalypse, he has a section on her. As I remembered it, she had a crown of the sun and her feet on the moon. And I don't think there's a reference to stars, but I couldn't be sure.
A great sign appeared in the sky, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars.
Okay.
So that's a mantle would be a cloak, right?
Yeah.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. It's awful close.
Or you could think of a crown as a mantle.
Mm-hmm, that could be.
Well, I
something above. Mm-hmm. A mantle is something above.
In the Greek mythology, Dionysus gives
Ariadne
a diadem of stars.
Mm-hmm.
Are there 12 of
them?
No, it's a corona
borealis. I found this one. This is as close as I could get. I'll check on the Revelation bit. See, she's got 12 stars on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the anima mundi.
A mantle can also be an important role or responsibility that passes from one person to another. Mm-hmm. Or it can be a cloth or a cloak that envelops, which reminds me of all those images we saw in Italy.
What's this?
That's a painting by Robert Flood around 1700. He was an alchemist. And it's called The Anima Mundi, The Soul of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got stars on her head, but apparently so does the Revelation. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to dig into that. Maybe this is a place to stop. I took this as the Anima Mundi, who's like second cousin to Sophia.
Well, and Mary wears a mantle of stars, her cloak, her blue cloak.
Does she? Can you find a picture of that?
Yeah,
yes.
That's really very common in Christian.
Mm-hmm. That's a Catholic thing,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
Can you see if you can find a picture and send me a link?
Yeah.
I checked. I couldn't come up with anything except that one. But I think what it represents is it's we're beginning to get resolution finally.
Well, it's definitely a new image.
It's a new image.
For our text.
Yeah.
And then he finally connects the mother to the serpent.
Yeah, so.
It's through the back door, kind of.
Right.
Oh, just mention, oh, you gave birth to it.
We got right. Mother. We got. A Turk. We got the frog swamp. we got love.
Remember I said, back when he was talking about that, I said, well, why isn't the mother connected to the serpent, too? Because she was connected to the white bird and the serpent. But now it is.
Now she is.
Now she is.
Yeah.
Yeah, seven.
Well, we'll pick up with that, huh? If you want to dig around, see what you come up with, I will also. How much did we get done today? 53. 54. We got through about two pages.
Wow, that's a lot for us.
It's probably a lot in our heads.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to see how one.
I think it's because it was so confusing
to let Mary go with it. I'm just trying to figure how many more meetings we're going to need. So we do two pages of meeting. So that will be one meeting. That will be one meeting. I'm going to say three more meetings to get through the book. And then two more meetings, if you all agree, to review. I think we should just do that.
I'll probably miss the review. I'll miss the reviews because I won't be here after March because I'll be taking care of the baby. I'll keep up on mine now.
Okay. We'll miss your comments. So let's see. What is today? So we have, let's say, five more meetings. So. March, February, March, probably by mid-April. It should be done.
Are we doing some of these appendices too?
Well, we did one, and the other appendix is a reference to way back. I thought that would be anticlimactic. That's Philemon and Dawkins again. Sorry, Philemon and Solomon.
Appendix B.
Yeah. How do we skip that?
We
it's not like we haven't done this book.
We had to read that for something already, right? B?
Did we?
I have it marked up. I don't know.
I'm assuming it was A.
We did A.
Yeah.
I think our text referred us to B at some point, and that's when I read it.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, pages 245 to 248.
Yeah. It's, I figure it would be anticlimactic to do that.
He just clarifies, he condenses their symbolism for us.
Okay. So we'll say we got as far as, as he spoke these words.
Okay.
And then finish the thing. We won't get that far, but in case we get on the roll. Very unlikely, but you never know. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.